Happy Sunday, and thank you for joining me today. A lot has happened in the news this week, and we will get to that later, but I want to start tonight with a story that you may not have heard about. More than 1,000 years ago, a group of Polynesian explorers discovered the Hawaiian Peninsula. Over time, an intrinsically Hawaiian culture was adopted. Exercises like fishing and agriculture became normalized. There was additionally a combination of Polynesian expressions, language, and also route customs. Also, there were social, political, and religious systems. For centuries, native Hawaiians practiced sovereignty over the islands. In 1810, these islands united, and very soon travelers from the United States arrived and had an idea for these huge pieces of land. How about turning it into a sugar industry? The missionaries from the United States stayed there for several reasons. A, because we could potentially make a profit with a nice new sugar industry here. Also, B, the Hawaiians, your religious practices are just immoral and evil. Therefore, here is some Christianity. And that 360-degree change, that turn in the culture, not only converted the Hawaiian people, according to one person who spoke to the Vox YouTube channel about this, they lost sense of who they truly were. Over time, the Christian ideology just diametrically replaced the native Hawaiian's culture, meaning it just completely got rid of it. Also, those missionaries wanted more power, becoming senior advisors to native Hawaiian monarchs. Being that they had their ear, they worked diligently to erase their language, their navigational practices, healing routines, and traditional hulu, a Hawaiian dance, essentially just destroying the Hawaiians' cultural roots. And after that, they transformed the political system, and they also kept an eye on land for themselves. According to Vox's timeline on this story, in 1887, a group of white businessmen rewrote the Hawaiian Constitution, and that was a recipe for a disaster. They became so close, including senior advisors to the monarchy, that they could rewrite the Constitution? From the perspective of them, from the perspective of these white businessmen, how do you think, and who do you think the revision of the Hawaiian Constitution would benefit? Well, certainly not the Hawaiian people. That would just have been a waste of time. So, in those revisions, they took power away from the monarchy and deprived native Hawaiians of their right to vote. In 1891, Hawaii's monarchical leadership changed when Queen Lilikunani ascended to power. She was 53 years old at the time and had composed more than 152 songs. She also was the translator of a Hawaiian chant. Very impressive life before becoming queen. And as queen, she attempted to restore most of the native Hawaiians' rights, and that did not sit well with those affluent white businessmen. So they decided that if we can't take this country, if we can't have this country by slowly eroding their constitutional monarchy and rewriting it to the benefit of us to eventually conquering this land, then we will just do it by force. So the Committee of Safety, led by these white prominent businessmen, led an insurrection, a coup, to overthrow the Queen's government. They took control of the nation and were assisted by a prominent foreign power. You want to guess what that foreign power was? The United States of America. An ambassador, a U.S. ambassador, sent some U.S. ships and troops there to Hawaii to support and lead this coup. Despite that being a huge violation of international sovereignty, the United States persisted. In 1893, after all that planning and strategizing, the United States illegally conquered the Hawaiian government. Subsequently, native Hawaiians began taking a stand for their country to get their rightful land back. So a huge petition was signed that gained more than 1,000 signatures, finally convincing the United States Congress to reject making Hawaii part of the United States. Apparently, those desperate pleas were ignored because in 1898, the Spanish-American War broke out and the Philippines was used for fighting. The U.S. then looked at Hawaii and said, maybe we could use that as a place to fight for, like, or to a place to, like, practice for military purposes. And so it happened. Congress didn't waste any time, soon passing a resolution that illegally annexed Hawaii. This independent, sacred, sovereign land that Native Hawaiians had owned, had kept for for years, for centuries here. And then these explorers from the United States, these white businessmen, they come into this country, they take the land, they start, the relations are initially friendly, but it leads to a coup. And then the United States illegally annexes the country, literally. The attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, was on Hawaii. That's why the United States got involved in World War II. But after Pearl Harbor, the United States declared martial law there and turned one specific piece of land named Koholawe into a military bombing site. By 1945, Hawaiians thought that they were getting their land back, but President Dwight D. Eisenhower issued an executive decree to extend the U.S. occupation of the island, where they continued to train. This continuously depleted the island, and in 1959, Hawaii became the 50th state in the United States. Native Hawaiian families were displaced by resorts, which were built there because many Americans saw this as sort of like a nice vacation spot. Condos were built. Also, new visitors began coming. Statehood was very different, and their native land had been taken over.
The United States Congress has admitted Hawaii as the 50th state. The islands were discovered over 180 years ago by the famous British navigator Captain Cook. In 1898, they were annexed by the United States, and in this century, they've become world famous as a holiday paradise. Many Americans must be as familiar with Hawaii as with their neighboring states back home. And many come to Hawaii to pay tribute to those who died at Pearl Harbor in 1941. But explosions aren't foreign to the islands. The world's largest active volcano makes a vivid contrast to the warm, semi-tropical gardens below. In Hawaii, the milk comes in coconuts. Waikiki Beach is one place no guidebook can exaggerate. And that goes for all the attractions in this incredibly beautiful land of the hula girls.
That was reporting from the British movie town. Aside from being a military bombing site, Hawaii was used to practice for the Korean War and the Vietnam War. In one practice, the United States Navy conducted a simulation with an atomic bomb that took place in almost every day in 1970, the year alone. Houses would shake for those who lived south side of Maui, and they would see the bombings occur. Very soon, local residents and politicians said enough, and they wanted to stop those bombings. In the 1970s, a new wave of Hawaiian activists, they sought change. They protested and they gave birth to a new movement to take back their rightful land. It gave rise to the Aloha Organization, which stood for Aboriginal Lands of Hawaiian Ancestry. Aloha kept trying to get Congress's attention, but they were consistently ignored, and they are also not taken earnestly. So they decided to do something revolutionary. In January of 1976, Aloha was looking for a place to occupy, so they chose Koholawe. On January 4th, 1976, they set out for travel, but then a problem emerged. According to Vox, a leak press release essentially that they were going to do this, and which led the United States Coast Guard to stopping them. Arrest and federal charges were threatened, but one particular boat was able to sneak past them and make it to the island. With the Coast Guard, essentially, they soon caught up, and they were able to get caught up with them, and they stopped them again. But these activists didn't come this long just to be stopped. They still got away. Two members of Aloha went deeper into the island and eventually made their way to the top. They stayed there for several days, and it wasn't until day three that federal marshals found and arrested them. This was one of the activists telling the story to Vox, the Vox YouTube channel, recently, years later.
One boat with a luli and eight other protesters on it snuck past the Coast Guard and made it to the island. But the Coast Guard wasn't far behind.
We saw them coming with their megaphones and telling us that we needed to board a Coast Guard cutter and get taken back to Maui. Myself and one of the organizers from Maui, Walter Riddy, decided we didn't come to Koholawe just to kind of get back with the Coast Guard.
As the Coast Guard caught up with the group on the shore, Aluli and Walter Riddy broke away and went deeper into the island. There were no trails to follow, and the paths were rough. But slowly, they made their way up to the peak of the island.
Then once you're on the top, just knowing that this island was almost central in our archipelago, that it must have been something real special, but then you see the devastation.
For 2 days, Aluli and Riddy hid out on the island.
The island was muddy, was red. There was just old trucks that were lined up to be caravans, and these were the targets. The whole island was littered with targets.
On day 3, federal marshals found Aluli and Riddy, arrested them, and flew them off the island.
But just being able to kind of be lifted up on a helicopter and seeing more damage and feeling more passionate about, we gotta do something, it was like the land was calling to me, pleading, crying, asking us to do something.
Once again, reporting from the Vox YouTube channel about that, about this just remarkable event that transpired on January 4th, 1976, when these group of Hawaiian activists from Aloha had essentially had this sort of standoff with the federal government to essentially get their attention here. And they certainly did. After Aloha did this, a group of people were inspired by what Aloha had did, and they formed their own group. This was called Protect Koholawe Ohana, and that started another movement called the Hawaiian Renaissance. The person who led this group was an activist called George Helm, and they began essentially staying on the island. And just like that, just like the last time, people were getting arrested and they were sent to prison. This was from the Honolulu Star Bulletin. Quote, Walter Ritt Jr. spent last night in a Honolulu police cell after being arrested by the FBI on trespassing charges stemming from a 5-day occupation of the Navy's target island, Koholawe. End quote. As the movement gained attraction among many, in 1977, a devastating event transpired. George Helm and Kimo Mitchell, two Hawaiian activists, were lost at sea on their way back from Koholawe. The father of Kimo Mitchell later said that he believed his son was dead as the search went on. Before Helm and Mitchell disappeared, a class-action civil rights lawsuit was brought against the United States Navy. The suit alleged that the Navy was violating national environmental laws and also the National Historic Preservation Act. By 1980, the Navy and PKO, which stands for Protect Koholawe Ohana, signed a consent decree. This essentially meant that the Navy had to start cleaning up the island and rendering some access to activists. One of the very first things those activists did was restore Makahiki, which is a Hawaiian religious celebration that had been censored for 200 years. 10 years later, in 1990, the new president of the United States, George H.W. Bush, and his administration ordered the immediate and complete stop of bombing the island of Koholawe. After these activists and local politicians had been talking about this for a long time, the Bush administration said, okay, that's enough. Following that decision, Congress then ordered the return of the island to Hawaii. A Hawaiian state legislator then banned any future profit activity like the sugar business idea that took control of the island back in the 1800s by these white businessmen. Today, as Vox News reports, organizations are still working to remove the bombing materials from the island and to fully restore it. In 1993, the Clinton administration delivered an official apology to Hawaii for the U.S.'s role in literally stealing it. Also under his administration in 1995, the federal government made a big promise to Hawaiians. They made a big promise to Native Hawaiians. This is reporting from the Honolulu Star-Advertiser and ProPublica. Quote, in 1995, the federal government promised to give the Hawaiian homes trust priority. when surplus federal lands in Hawaii became available. The government long ago had taken control of more than 1,400 acres of trust land without compensating Hawaiians. This practice mirrored what happened to a much larger extent in 1898 when the island chain was annexed by the United States, and roughly 1.8 million acres of former Hawaiian kingdom land was taken with no compensation to its indigenous people. End quote. According to reporting from ProPublica and the Honolulu Star-Advertiser, the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act was signed into law in 1921, but the program run by Hawaii's territorial government under U.S. supervision was seriously hampered from the start. Quote, much of the land was remote and ill-suited for homesteading, lacking water and other basics, and the federal government provided little funding and inadequate oversight. In the first 38 years, only about 1,700 homesteads were rewarded. The poor conditions persisted after the state took control over management as a requirement of statehood in 1959 when Hawaii became a state. State and federal reports going back to decades have identified many faults, including the state's inability to deliver homesteads in a timely manner. It also continues, quote, stung by the decades-long criticism over the waitlist problem, DHHL in the early 1990s switched from the so-called pocket development, constructing homes in small numbers to building large subdivisions. The change enabled the agency to offer dozens of, sometimes hundreds, of so-called turnkey homes in batches. The Wahi administration was instrumental in advancing the strategy. The governor and his team secured from the state $600 million settlement to compensate DHHL for misuse of trust of lands in the years following statehood. The state paid the agency $30 million annually for 20 years, starting in 1995, and much of that money went to the infrastructure work for new subdivisions, end quote. So this is reporting from the Honolulu Star-Advertiser and also from ProPublica. If you're wondering, I did quote about the Wahi administration there. The person I was talking about there was John Wahi. He was the former governor of Hawaii. He served as the first native Hawaiian to serve in that role. And he essentially said that this program isn't working for anybody. Others are calling the program essentially a complete failure. So many people in the state of Hawaii think that this program, this homesteading program set up a century ago to create a homesteading program for native Hawaiians with a singular goal in mind, according to ProPublica and the Honolulu Star-Advertiser, quote, especially to return Hawaiians, especially impoverished ones, to their native lands. For decades, though, community leaders and lawmakers have decried the slow rate at which homesteads have been awarded, end quote. So many people believe that this program here is futile. It's not working. And they're not being hyperbolic when they say that this, for decades, though, community members and lawmakers have decried the slow rate at which homesteads have been awarded. This is another headline. It says here, quote, the government promised to return ancestral Hawaiian land, then never finished the job. Another one says to reclaim ancestral land, all Native Hawaiians need is a $300,000 mortgage and to wait in line for decades. End quote. As I say, they're not being hyperbolic about that decades part, because one person literally died waiting for a homestead. Hundreds of people, lots of people have died waiting for homesteads here, waiting decades. One person waiting since 1987 and still waiting now. So it's depressing to think of this now, as the United States' history of getting Hawaii, illegally annexing it into the Union. And the story itself is just horrific. Hawaii officially became a state in 1959. Years later, there are still problems in terms of returning Native Hawaiians their land. I mean, yes, this program is going on right now to at least work on that, but many activists, and including the former governor himself, have declared the program essentially futile. One of the last headlines on this story was on May 26th, just recently, says, quote, "The United States broke its promise to return land to Hawaiians. My family knows something about land loss." If you're wondering about the "my" there, as I said, this reporting is collaboration with ProPublica with the Honolulu Star Advertiser. The Honolulu Star Advertiser essentially started reporting on this. ProPublica then collaborated on this story. This story didn't start in 2020 as the headline has it. This is a story that has been transpiring for many years. And the "my" in that headline is Rob Perez. He is a reporter for the Honolulu Star Advertiser. He has been reporting on this story since 2013 for 8 years about Native Hawaiians' efforts to not only get their land back, but maybe some activists, maybe a new activist movement right now working to get their land back here. And also to, I guess, fix up this federal program, the state program, began in 1921 to return Native Hawaiians to their land. But there are even still some problems with that, including inadequate water supply, unsanitary living conditions. Mr. Rob Perez joins me next to discuss his family story and also his reporting. Stay with us.
I love my new home. I always wanted a house with historic architecture, but it might be too Victorian.
Hey gosh, interesting hemline on those pants.
Yes, I do believe they're called pants.
Pardon me.
No, pardon me. At least Geico makes bundling my home and car insurance easy. I save so much.
I have come to call upon...
Just text me. Well, I'm heading up.
It's a ghost.
For bundling made easy, go to geico.com.
It's called self-care.
This is how we do it.
Turns out Montel Jordan knows how to do almost everything. And it turns out that General is a quality insurance company that's been saving people money for nearly 60 years. For a great low rate and nearly 60 years of quality coverage, go with the General.
Joining me now for the interview is Rob Perez. He's a reporter for the Honolulu Star Advertiser. He's been reporting on this story about Native Hawaiians here since 2013, according to him. So, Mr. Perez, thank you so very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you've been reporting about how Native Hawaiian families have been removed from their land. What I found in your articles is that you have a personal family story related to this. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I'm from the island of Guam, which mm-hmm. is just over 4,000 miles from Hawaii, you know, a lot closer to Japan. Mm-hmm. And I'm a member of the Chamorro population, the indigenous people of Guam. And after World War II, a lot of lands on Guam were seized by the US government, the federal government, because they were transforming the island into a major military outpost. Mm-hmm. Because of its strategic value being the westernmost territory for the U.S. And there were a lot of lands owned by Chamorro families that were seized by the U.S. government, and very little compensation was provided. And my family on both my mother's and father's side lost land because of that. And they've been trying since then to get just compensation. In some cases, they've succeeded. In some cases, they haven't. So that land taking, the dispossession of indigenous people from their lands is something that...
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, the audio is breaking up there. I heard you say dispossession. Could you repeat that again?
Oh, the dispossession of Native peoples from their lands is something that, you know, strikes close to home for me. Mm-hmm. And that's one reason why I've took an interest in reporting on the homesteading program for Native Hawaiians.
Mm-hmm. So about this program, you reported on how it was created in 1921. It was set up to return and ancestral land to Native Hawaiians, and there have been some achievements with this program. But there have also been some failures as well, including people dying while waiting on the list here. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, in the 100 years that the program has been in existence, the state agency that manages the program has issued about 10,000 leases, mm-hmm. Mostly residential, some agricultural, some ranching leases. But there are 28,000 Hawaiians on a wait list, and some have waited decades for them. Thousands have died without getting a lease. And that's the problem. The problem is that the state agency that manages this program has not done a good job of getting Hawaiians off the wait list and onto these lands in a timely basis. Mm-hmm. And that's their main fundamental mission, is return these Hawaiians, these eligible Hawaiians. You have to be at least 50% Hawaiian to be on the wait list. Their mission is to return them to these lands in a timely fashion. And they've fallen far short of that for a whole variety of reasons.
Hmm. John Wahi, the former governor of Hawaii, who was the first Native Hawaiian to serve in that role, said that the program is not working for anybody. Others are calling it a complete failure. Have there been efforts to improve the program over the course of recent years?
Yeah, the state agency has been trying to improve the program. They are doing more planning for more multifamily housing. Up until now, the main focus of the program has been to develop single family homes on the trust lands. But the problem has been that many Hawaiians on the wait list simply cannot afford the $300,000 or more that these homes have been sold for. Mm-hmm. And so what they've done to try and address that is to do more multifamily, which are, you know, the homes are cheaper. But they have not been doing it to the scale that's needed to substantially reduce the wait list. They've also tried things like that they have a rent-to-own project. The second one that they've done is being planned right now on one of the neighbor islands. They had one here on Oahu in 2017, there were 70 families who were in this rent-to-own program here on Oahu that were able to successfully become homeowners through this pilot program. And so they're trying to duplicate it on one of the neighbor islands. They also just recently approved the concept of a program where the state agency will provide down payment assistance to a select number of people on the wait list for Oahu residential homesteads. And the idea behind this is they're going to provide down payment assistance so they can purchase homes off of trust land. The first time this would ever be done in this program. And the whole idea is if they can help people on the wait list provide homes, even if it's not on trust land, those people can be removed from the wait list and take some of the pressure, you know, off of the huge demand for housing. Because mm-hmm. when you look at the residential wait list statewide, that's about 23,000 Hawaiians are on that wait list. Mm. So there have been, you know, efforts to address the huge pent-up demand for housing. The problem is that none of them are going to substantially move the needle. And so many people on the wait list are fearful that they'll go another decade or two without getting a lease.
Hmm. based on your reporting, have Native Hawaiians lost trust in the United States' government's efforts to return their land? I mean, I reported at the top of the show about how this one organization called Aloha was able to take back, I think it was the, sorry if I'm pronouncing this wrong, the Kauai Island. And so is that trust there? Has that trust like gone?
Well, you got to look at it two different ways. One, there's the role that the federal government plays. Mm-hmm. And they, in 1921, provided to, at the time, the territorial government, about 200,000 acres for this land trust. And then when Hawaii became a state in 1959, one of the conditions of statehood is that they basically take over and manage this homesteading program. And so right now it's for the beneficiaries of this trust, the people who are eligible for the homesteads, they look at the state agency, the agency that manages the trust, as failing in the mission of providing homesteads on a timely basis. What the federal government's role is they, back in 1995, Congress passed a law that basically said, we're going to return lands to the trust to make up for the hundreds of acres that the federal government took from the trust in the decades preceding that, without compensating the Hawaiian beneficiaries. And so the federal government said in 1995, we're going to start transferring excess federal lands to the trust, this Hawaiian Homes Land Trust, to make amends for those past wrongs. And that's where my most recent story was, how the federal government, after making this pledge, then soon thereafter started undermining it, mm-hmm. by approving special legislation that allowed excess lands here in Hawaii, excess federal land, instead of being given to the trust to basically retire the federal government's land debt to the trust, the special legislation allowed the federal government to sell that excess land to private parties, basically, has become controversial as a result of my story, is that a lot of the Native Hawaiian beneficiaries of the trust were unaware that this was happening. And because of my reporting, two members of our congressional delegation said, they'll make sure it doesn't happen again. But that has contributed to the erosion of trust in the federal government from sort of helping this program succeed.
A lot of the land Native Hawaiians have been promised that will be returned here has been depleted. Reports of inadequate water supply and unsanitary living conditions. Are there efforts to improve the land, or at least, I guess, improve the conditions before they are returned?
Well, the main problem with the lands, the undeveloped lands in this trust, are lack of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these lands are in remote areas. So the cost of providing infrastructure is huge. And this department historically has been underfunded by the state. And so without adequate funding to, put in the water lines, the sewer lines, the electrical lines, the land just sits idle. And that's been the main problem. This most recent session, legislative session, which ended earlier this month, as a result of our reporting on this program and the many challenges it faced, our legislature appropriated $78 million in construction money for this program. And that's the most that's ever been appropriated in CIP money, construction money for this program. And some of the, you know, some of that is due to the increased attention the program has received because of our reporting. But, you know, people can point to things like that to say, oh, maybe, you know, things will start getting better. There's this record amount that has been appropriated this session. Now it's up to the state agency, you know, to effectively use it and, you know, ideally start reducing the wait list, you know, by more than what's happened to date.
On top of this program being of a resource to regaining that land, are there like concerted efforts on the ground by some Native Hawaiians to regain the land by like protesting and petitions?
Well, the protests that we've seen in recent years have largely been focused on other projects, not projects related to the Hawaiian Homes Program. Mm-hmm. So the main one, the one that has received international attention, is the protest to build a giant telescope atop Mauna Kea, which is a mountain that many Hawaiians consider sacred. And it's on the Big Island, Hawaii Island. And there's been a lot of protests to try and block that construction of that project. There have been other protests over some wind farm alternate energy projects because they've been relatively close to residential areas. So most of the protests that you've seen the last several years have not been directly related to the Hawaiian Homes Program. When there was a proposal that was floated at before our legislature this past session to build a casino on trust land, that did spark a protest with you know, Hawaiians and others coming out and, you know, waving signs to oppose the project. And that that project was not, it was killed. The bill to allow that project was killed in the legislature.
Based on your reporting of what's happened in the past and what's happening right now, is there hope among Native Hawaiians for the future here?
Well, I think it depends on who you talk to. There are many Hawaiians who have been on the wait list for decades, you know, who've been waiting for decades to get a homestead. Some of them will tell you, you know, I'm not going to get one before I die. And they have, you know, largely given up hope. But then there are others you talk to, other beneficiaries of this program, who basically say the key to improving the program is going to be the beneficiaries themselves organizing and becoming more active and becoming trying to achieve a greater voice in how decisions are made about this program. So you see more of that happening where homestead organizations and beneficiary organizations are trying to mobilize, step up their mobilization to get more Hawaiians active in the political process and in the decision-making process. And they're lobbying the federal government to get more federal regulations that apply to this program. They're lobbying the legislature to get more funding for the program, and they're lobbying the state agency that manages the program to, you know, try and affect change that will help improve the program and deliver on the mission of returning these Hawaiians to their lands.
Once again, my guest is Mr. Rob Perez. He is a reporter for the Honolulu Star Advertiser. He has been following the story once again since 2013. Mr. Perez, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right.